Greetings. I present to you the SMK, the Sentinel's Marvelous Kaleidoscope, at CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph, Ontario, through the web on cfru.ca, and on CFRU's YouTube channel. I am your Master Overseer, Nicholas Cooper. We will be looking inward and beyond at progressive rock, the branches of progressive, fusion, and alternative genres, a solar plexus anomaly, and other unique discoveries near and far. Join me as we gaze into the audible lens out of the diverse musical landscape on the ever-changing horizon. Welcome, good sentries, and listeners and viewers, to an audience in the Observational Tower, the music interview series I conduct through the SMK here on CFRU and online cfru.ca. Today, we are focused to skew our gaze upon Animatus, a favorite band of mine. You've been hearing me play them so many times. I think I probably burnt out the CD they gave me, but I have them here live in the station. Hey guys.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey. I'm pretty good. How are you guys?
Pretty great.
Yeah, we're doing perfectly fine.
All right. Yeah. Why don't we introduce yourselves to us in the good sentries?
Each band member?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought we were just going to be a nameless anomaly. Okay.
Unless you want that.
No, let's tell everybody. On drums, we've got Ian Hines. On bass, we've got Steve Cook.
Ew.
On saxophone and electronics, we've got Danielle Fernandez.
Oh, boy.
And then on guitar and other horrible noises, you've got Brent O'Toole, myself.
Awesome. Thanks, Ian, Steve, Danielle, and Brent for coming finally here on the SMK. I'm excited.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm excited. Yeah, I can see exactly how excited you are. The second we pulled up in the car, I was like, Nick's excited.
Yep. Bouncing around.
Yeah. I'm excited, too.
Yes, we've had a long history, but why don't we first, before we get into our interview segments, we're going to hear you perform.
Sure, yeah, we can start with a song, yeah.
Yeah, what song are you thinking of starting this feature with?
All of our songs have really dumb names, especially the new ones. So this one is called Train Pelicans.
Excellent. Train Pelicans by Animatus, here playing live at CFRU on the Sentinel's Marvelous Kaleidoscope.
Thank you.
Amazing. That was Animatis with Train Pelicans here live at CFRU 93.3 FM and currently streaming, hopefully on YouTube, on the CFRU's YouTube channel.
Yeah, hopefully.
Welcome again, guys. Great, great first song. That was amazing.
Thanks.
Why don't we now start with the questions? Let's go way back to how music entered your lives and why, how important it is to you, like you've been like growing up and like and now.
Who wants to start?
Brent, start.
Okay. Oh God. I do have the mic. That was a bad choice of mine. My parents kind of forced me to start music a little bit, and I actually really hated it as a kid. They
oh
got
my God,
me.
Same.
Yeah, welcome to a lot of musicians' lives. No, but they started me out on piano just in like Royal Conservatory. I think they just thought it was something you should do. My grandfather was into music, and it just seemed like, I don't know, I guess something you put your kids into. You put them into sports, you put them into. You know, any science things they're interested in, you also just get them started on piano. So they started on piano with me, and I hated it. I hated music. I thought performing music was the worst.
What a difference it is now.
Oh, no, it's still the worst. No, I'm kidding. At about 12 years old, 13 years old, just as I'm becoming a teenager, my older cousin was a musician, and he had this really old, beat-up-looking Squire Stratocaster at his place. And he invited me by once, and... He introduced me to a lot of experimental music, like the Velvet Underground and a lot of other experimental 60s music, and I became obsessed with the look of that guitar, looking like crap. Like, one of the pickups didn't even work on it. It was covered with electrical tape, and the fretboard was horribly dirty, and that really interested me for some reason. So I picked up guitar, and everything kind of changed from then on, because music became something that I could do instead of something I was told to do. And now we're here somehow. Who wants to go next?
Yeah, I think I had a similar experience because I started learning music from a young age because my dad made me do it. My dad very badly wanted to be a musician all his life, and I think his parents strongly discouraged him from doing so. He always tells me the story about how he bought his own guitar when he was young with his own money that he earned, and then his mother literally threw it out of the window.
Oh no.
And told him to stop wasting his time with music, and he had to like go outside and like pick up his guitar and mend it himself. That's lovingly.
That's horrible.
And he like told me that story, and me and my siblings that story like all our lives growing up. And so I think he was like, these people are going to be musicians. That's what it's going to be. And so I went through the similar thing where I like was made to do music growing up, and I did all the conservatory stuff, and I also hated music when I was growing up, but now I'm very grateful that I had the opportunity to learn it, because he mm-hmm. just was trying to bestow the opportunity upon us that he never got himself, and so I'm grateful for that now, and now it's my life.
Is this the point where we like horribly admit that our parents were right about something? Steve or Ian? Which one wants to go? Stevie. Oh, save best for last.
So, I should have went first, because those were much better stories than I have. I don't know. I don't have a particularly musical family, I wouldn't say. I'm sorry if you're watching, but my mother can't even identify a pitch of any kind ever for any reason.
She's like, this is a pitch, right? Is this a pitch? Is that what a pitch is?
No. So, but anyway, I wasn't, you know, forced into music or anything like that. I had an older cousin who would show me songs that were cool teenager songs when I was a kid, and I would, you know, listen to, you know, like Our Lady Peace and I don't know, just cool stuff that he showed me, and I thought it was cool. And he was very fond of the bass. He was a big Red Hot Chili Peppers fan at the time, and you know, Flea, and he was like, oh, you gotta listen to the bass. And so I listened to the bass, and that was what I did. And from there, it was like I was going to middle school, and there was a band program that I was supposed to be in, and I was like, I want to play the cool instrument. I'm going to play the bass guitar. And they told me, you can't play the bass guitar unless you already know how. They're not going to teach you how to play. So we got a private instructor and like came to my house and took lessons so I could learn, so I could play a cool instrument. and I just never stopped doing it. So that's it.
It's, don't you ever stop, Steve.
There's no cool stories about, you know, mending your window thrown guitar, but yeah, no. So you know, just
sure
going
that
on.
Wasn't very cool at the time.
Yeah, it's, you know, getting close to 20 years later, and I'm still doing it. So. Yeah.
All right, and best for last, let's bring it on to you.
Best for last. So I actually share a similar start with Daniel and Brent. However, my parents didn't really force me into it. They just kind of identified that I liked drums because I had a friend growing up. Shout out to Parker Weiss from Sarnia, Ontario.
Parker!
He had a Ludwig kit, and we would play like Blink-182 songs. And I literally had that moment where I just instant affinity, instant connection to drums. I can't explain it. It was instantaneous. And after that, my parents kind of capitalize on that, and they said, hey, we're gonna give you some lessons. And I was very thankful to have lots of drum teachers. I think I had four really wicked, educational, inspiring drum teachers. Shout out to them as well.
They know who they are.
Yeah, you know who you are, guys. Okay. And do I come from a musical family? Yes and no. I believe my great grandmother played violin. Honestly, my dad always had a good sense of rhythm, but wasn't a good musician. Endowed me with a lot of my musical taste for sure. Like, made me listen to Pink Floyd as a kid and Roger Waters independent stuff and lots of Supertramp. So I was definitely blessed in that, right? And yeah, that's basically it. The rest was history. Still giving her.
All great stories. So speaking of instruments, how did the rest of you come into your own instruments? Like, I think, Brent, you already mentioned that you found the Stratocaster.
Yeah, the Strat at my cousin's place, yeah. That would probably be it for guitar. I don't know. I was playing a lot of Tony Hawk Pro Skater. And yeah, number three had an AC/DC song in it, and I got really obsessed with TNT. It's really funny because I feel like most of the people that start making music probably don't continue making the music that got them into it.
So
like, I don't think I've listened to AC/DC for well over a decade, probably.
No, I think the same for me. My first instrument was guitar, actually. I picked up the guitar when I was 7, and I started learning classical guitar. And so I was continuing music throughout, like, elementary school. And then, you know, from grade 6, you're doing, like, choir at the school I was at. And then by grade 7, you switch over to band. So you get to pick your instrument. I was like, man, I got to pick something cool. I got to pick something.
Yes,
I got to pick something sweet. So my first choice was saxophone. I luckily got the saxophone, my first choice. And I didn't put it down since. It just became my primary instrument since then.
You're so lucky.
I know.
My first choice was saxophone when in middle school, but I ended up with clarinet. But thankfully, I love it now.
Oh, clarinet is still so cool.
Did you get the bass clarinet to start with, though, or did you just get regular clarinet?
Regular first, yeah, and then grew to love bass clarinet.
I got the regular clarinet, and they never let me give it up.
Why don't we take a break from questions, and we'll let you perform your next tune for us.
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
What song will this be?
This one is called Family.
Say the full title.
You say the full title.
You, Steve. You're the only one who knows the full title.
Yes. Steve named this one, so yeah, he's got to say
this,
it.
This song is called I Have Completed... Oh, the song is called I Have Completed My Family. Which
what's the story behind that?
Tell us the story, Steve.
It's just me and my coworkers making fun of stuff. I design EMR electronic medical record forms for med spas, and they send us horrible English lot. They send us, like, there's a lot of really badly typed up stuff that we have to turn into forms. And there was one that just made me laugh out loud, that there was a bunch of checkboxes for some kind of vitality clinic or something like that. And one of the checkboxes of things that apply to you was, I have completed my family, in all caps and no spaces.
Oh. I didn't know no spaces.
And I just thought it was funny.
The end.
Wicked. Let's hear I Have Completed My Family with Annie Mattis here on CFRU 93.3 FM.
I don't know
Thank you.
Animatist with I Have Completed My Family here on the Sentinel's Marvelous Kaleidoscope.
Yeah, our song titles always sound better from other people.
Well, thank you for saying that.
Especially for me.
Oh, yeah, that was beautiful and heavy at the same time.
Sick. That's what we want our band to be.
Now let's get into how... Is there a fascinating story of how the band came together?
It's a long one.
Yeah, it's like...
It took years.
It did take years to put together. Do you want like the redacted version or
probably be a good idea?
We can rush through this. Technically, I started this band, but we all kind of came together quite naturally. Steve and I have been playing music together for a long time. Probably the furthest back musical relationship is me and you in this band, right?
Yeah, probably.
So that same cousin I mentioned that has the Stratocaster, he played in a band that was originally called The Eye. Eventually became The Wires. It was this really cool Brampton-based project where I grew up, that was a mix of rock and roll, of soca music, of, like, the singer was Grenadian, so he brought a lot of dance and kind of those rhythms into it. Of course, he was the vocalist, so he had a lot of influence over how the band sounded. And I played in that band for a short period of time, but even back when I was in grade 9 or 10... Steve would come down to my house and play with that band even before I was in it. So I knew how great of a bass player he was. We always had a friendship and played well together in that band. Ian, I came across in high school because we would pass each other in the hallway. And what was the nickname you gave me? I had really long hair and circular glasses, and he used to call me...
Quick backstory. There's this picture in Brent's household, and he has these glasses, long reddish hair, and I would call him John Lennon. And so every time I'd pass by him in the hallways, I just kind of yell at like Lennon or Lenny or whatever. And we never really conversed or had built up any rapport. So he probably thought I was a big tool anyway.
Can I say your name in high school or no?
Yeah, of course.
So Ian also had dreadlocks and looked like a huge stoner.
He was
also a huge stoner. I was too, but I didn't look like it, right? So he would call me Lenny, and based on his high school nickname, I would call him Shroomy. So it was a lot of... like years of just walking by each other, Lenny, Shroomy, until I used to record bands, and I had a few bands down into my basement to record, and Ian's band was there, and
the Muff Divers.
It was Jig and Amble, was the band, which is a weird Shakespearean reference. All you Shakespearean weirdos out there, maybe you'll catch what Jig and Amble is. But so they came down to record, and I remember I was really into the Mars Volta at the time, and I asked him to like sound check drums, and of course you want to just get levels. So can you just play the whole kit? Like, I want to know what you're gonna sound like. And he was like, yeah, I'm just gonna play Roulette Dares by the Mars Volta, and I was like, sure, okay, go ahead, you can do whatever you want. And he started playing, and I was very instantly blown away. It was the first time I got to hear him play, and he was a very, very 16, tight drummer. Yeah. So I think 16. I was 17. You were 16 at the time. So that's how kind of how the band started. I stole Ian from his best friend at the time. His friend even calls me on the phone. Shout out to Tom Carvalho. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm airing this, but I did there. Anyways, actually, let's move on. Let's not air that. So we started the band. We had a different bass player at the time, John Westwood. Huge shout out to John Westwood if he ever hears this. He was a huge part of starting the band. I think him and I started the band probably before Ian and I put it together, and we did an EP together back in 2009. Huge gap in the band after that. Ian and I were constantly trying to keep it alive and figure out how we were going to play. We were thoughts of just keeping it as a two-piece. And so the next like three, four years history of the band was just us figuring out what we wanted to do and how we were going to do it. I was attending the University of Guelph at the time, and I stumbled into Danielle in the music program. We met at one of the Thursday at Noon concert lunches for the music program.
Oh, yeah.
And I heard she played saxophone, and I was just looking for people to jam with. I didn't know that many people in Guelph, so I invited her down, I don't know, like winter of 2012? Around that?
13. I met you in 2013.
Okay, 2013, sure. And we just started playing together as the three of us. And we just jammed on some ideas that Ian and I had, but it immediately became like a connection as a band. I thought it sounded really good.
your sax playing kind of reminded me of some of the sax playing on Pink Floyd, in terms of tone, but also we just connected in a lot of good ways musically that I really liked. So we played our first show at what was formerly Rancho Relaxo in Toronto.
Wow, and it was forever.
Yeah, it was the three of us, and that was in 2015.
Yeah.
2015, January of 2015. We went on to play a second show there, and we got a sub-in bassist at the time, Zach Backerdax, who knew he was just filling in for that show, taught him all the parts, and Steve came out. I hadn't seen him in years, and he came out to see us at the show, and he walked up to me after we finished playing, obviously really excited by it, obviously not playing with a band at the time, and you asked if our bass player was permanent. And I said, no, this is like the only gig he's doing with us is just subbing in. And you were like, I'm your bassist. And I don't think it was quite that menacing. He didn't have a microphone to put close to his mouth. But he just kind of said, I'm your bassist. And I felt so stupid. I had been hunting for a bass player for so long. And I never even thought. It was like the second he said it, I sat there and I was like, why didn't you just call him sooner? What are you doing, friend? So that was kind of, the band came together. We had a first jam together, and it just made sense after that. But that was many years to get
that
this band
going. That
was
the redacted version.
Yeah.
It's the short version.
And the other one, there's car chases and police officers.
Aliens.
And stolen girlfriends. No, there isn't. None of the, yeah, but there are aliens.
No stolen girlfriends.
Well, I'm glad the band has turned out so well and fabulous together.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Welcome. So a lot of music descriptions have been thrown at you guys. How would you describe what music you play, or if that's even possible?
If Steve wants it. Steve, give it to Steve. Oh, what has Steve got to say?
Yes.
I got this. Ian's got this.
Yeah, no, I'm just kidding. Okay. How do I describe our music to people? So, okay, it's eclectic, first of all. So I describe it as, long story short, math jazz. That's how I describe it. But if I were to elaborate on that, it's like instrumental math jazz, I guess. Slight elaborate. But like, yeah, math jazz is pretty much primarily how I describe it to people.
I also throw around post-rock.
Yes.
Sometimes. Mm-hmm. Instrumental post-rock. Or when people like really don't understand math rock, post-rock, or like look confused when I say instrumental, I just say, it's experimental.
Yeah, it's weird and experimental. I think the more experimental music gets, the more the genre names don't really matter. Like it's a nice signifier for the area that a music comes from. But when you have to start putting like 8 or 9 genre tags, you're like, it's post everything.
I don't know. You can hear it. That's it.
Yeah. That's the nice thing now is that like music is instantly accessible online. So if you really have to show somebody, we just generally just show them what the music sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, those were good descriptions. That covers it.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Pre-post-rock.
Yeah, pre-post. Post-rock.
I guess you could say it's progressive also.
Oh, yeah.
There
oh
it is. There's the scary word.
That's what I was waiting for.
We're prog. Oh, no.
Which then brings me to my next question. What do you guys think of progressive music, like, as a style, as well as, like, a concept, I guess.
Or Steve's got a hot take on this one, it looks like.
Yes.
Don't.
And that was Steve's hot take, everybody. All right. I think I grew up listening to that kind of stuff because my dad introduced me. So I loved Jethro Tull as a kid.
Oh.
I loved Jethro Tull. Oh, that's so cool.
That's so weird.
Danielle, we have to talk later about Jethro Tull together.
I know. But I just always had like an interest in like music that was not conventional. It didn't have a conventional song structure. I thought it was more interesting. I thought there was more to latch onto.
Definitely.
So.
And it
In case it wasn't obvious, I also mean that Yes is a progressive rock band.
Double entendre. Just to expand on Danielle's excellent point. Yeah, that's the interesting thing about progressive music for me too, the constant fluctuation, not being stagnant or linear, so to speak. And obviously we like the really techie stuff because we're nerds.
Yes.
This might sound a little controversial. I'm not the biggest fan of what is usually labeled as prog rock. Exactly as they said.
It's such a broad term.
Yeah, it's such a broad term that there's always, for genres, there's always like what the genre describes and then the stereotype that that genre becomes. Like, I think like math rock has become this thing with jangly Telecasters and open tunings and people doing, you know, a lot of like tapping, and that's great, and that's a great style of music, but that's not usually, like, I don't think that describes us at all, even though we're described by math. I think the same thing happens in prog. But I mean, there's a lack of willingness to explore in mainstream art. So I always am interested by anybody that's willing to do something slightly different, whether it's in visual art, whether it's in music, but especially in music. It can be so normalized, made into such pop music, and anybody that's willing to continue exploring, that's how we got to all the cool musics that we have now, right? Even really mundane, boring rock music was at one point really experimental and really weird. So as long as people continue experimenting, that's when we'll find whatever the next music is going to be. Music 2.
Yeah, I think the only reason we shy away from the word prog is because when I say, oh, we're a progressive or a prog rock, people are like, oh, like this band? Oh, like King Crimson? Oh, like this? And I'm like, it's not exactly like that. So I don't want to say that we're like that.
Yeah. No, that's understandable. Yeah. And you also want to be have your own sound.
Yeah.
Can I have the mic for a sec?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, just to expand on that. Yeah. Just taking over over here. This is the Ian show now.
So demanding.
Just to expand upon your point, Nick, it's very important to me and probably these cool cats as well that people feel like the music. And what I mean by that is not like feel the music, like dance. Like I want it to be provocative. I want it to be to invoke something within you, stir something up and make you feel like you can even feel bad feelings. That's okay. Like that's totally permitted. I actually had this one, our last Guelph show, which was at Silence, I had the most memorable remark from this lovely woman. I forget what her name is. Shout out to her though. You're out there somewhere. ambiguous. Okay. But, what she said to me after the show was, first of all, she's like, your, band's music is ethereal. And right then and there, I'm like, you're super cool. Like that is the descriptive word that I want you to say. And then she goes to say, when I was listening to your music, it like stirred up all this like dark stuff within me, and it was kind of like coming out of me, and just the way she was describing it is exactly how I want people to feel. Like not necessarily happy or excited, but just like, because it's like yin and yang, like, you know, darkness as much as light.
A whole mixture of internal emotions,
exactly.
Flowing
precisely.
Yeah, it's anxiety, but it feels good.
Yeah, exactly. Why don't we get to another song or another piece?
Yeah. Can I use this time to do a little plug because it makes sense for this song?
Sure.
So I'm also involved with a DIY record label that's probably, if anybody's been listening to the shows following up to this, Nick, you've been playing a lot of music from that compilation. So I'm involved with Glue Gun Records. I'm involved with my very close friend, Jesse Alarcon, who runs it a lot more than I do. And we just put out a compilation of 14 exclusive tracks donated from tons of great musicians that were in the area. Everybody, I just kind of put the feelers out there and was like, hey, I like your band. I like your music. Do you have a track for this compilation I'm putting out? And I didn't know what to expect. Everybody sent me music that was way better than I kind of had my sights on. Not that I thought they were going to send me something bad, but a few of these tracks have become my favorite tracks from these artists.
It is a great compilation.
Yeah, I think we put something together really good. Thank you very much. So you can find that on the Glue Gun Records Bandcamp, gluegunrecords.bandcamp.com. This next track is hopefully going to be on an upcoming record of ours, but is currently available, at least in this form, on that compilation, and we've called it Beg.
Two.
It's technically Beg 2, but it came out before Beg 1. So, yeah, it's a sequel to an unreleased track. Right.
Excellent. Here again is Annie Mattis performing here at CFRU on the Sentinel's Marvelous Kaleidoscope.
Do you want to do some noise first? Should we do some noise and then like cue it or no?
Let's do the drunken.
Drunk? No, not the drunk thing. We didn't. But let's do some. Let's do some noise though.
Sure.
Some noise. Okay. Oh God, we're so ready. I swear. Where we're ready. Okay. We'll be right back.
Beg 2 by Animatist here live at CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, and on CFRU's YouTube channel. I guess other than having you guys here in on my radio show, it's been so long since I've been playing you guys for like almost the entirety of the SMK's history, playing Face Club. That's the official album that I guess your first full length album. What year was that? 2017.
Face Club was 2017 for sure. I think it was the middle of March of 2017 we did our release.
Yeah, it was March.
Indeed. Excellent. And I've played that maybe 3 times over or something. And
as long as somebody is.
We feel so loved by you.
Yeah. This whole thing, us appearing on here, seems like a long time coming.
Mm-hmm. And other than that, the other reason is because you will be performing in Guelph later this week.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys want to talk about that?
Yeah, this show we've been looking forward to for a period of time. We knew it was booked a little bit ago. This is my same, I guess, co-worker? I don't know. The other co-creator of Glue Gun Records, Jesse Alarcon, he's putting this show together. My colleague... Jesse Alarcon. Anyways, yeah, he's putting the show together, and we've got it's just gonna be a pretty weird night. I don't think there's a normal band on the bill. The most normal band we have on there, I think, is Burner, which is just a party in a bag. Oh my god, they're so much fun, and they're great to see live.
Yeah,
and even then, they're like pretty experimental. Post-hardcore territory a little bit. Post-punk, post-hardcore.
They're heavy.
Yeah, they're really heavy. It's sick.
Avant-garde.
Avant-garde. They destroy you when you see them live, but it's also a party in a good way.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
And then we've also got Yumpster, which we listened to their track Illinois earlier that was on the compilation. It sounds like that, but it's even weirder, and you can see all of their faces, and that's... Oh, they got some good faces.
Yeah, I got to see them earlier this year. Well, it was the same concert that we, Brent, we've met actually for the first time in person at the Dearly Departed District.
Yeah, I remember that show now. Yeah, that seems like a long time ago. R.I.P. in peace, District.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, it's a bummer that club shut down. But yeah, Yumpster is it's all improvised. It's all spastic noise. Jesse is also in that group. Mm-hmm. Chris Harry, who plays in Karloff and also does an independent track on the Glue Gun Records track, is Kit Tojari. He's going to be playing drums. I'm not sure if Benny's going to be there, but if he is, Benny Gasho's on vocals. And then it's hometown hero Dan Lockerman on guitar.
Yeah.
We're going to be playing there as well. Normally we don't split up all our tracks. We usually just kind of start and just go for it. So that's what we'll be doing at this show. And then we've got you, Nick Cooper, opening it up.
Yeah.
Yours.
Now I haven't seen you live. We're going to turn the tables on this interview. I'm asking you the questions now.
All right. Ask away.
Is it just you looping the clarinet, or are there other noises involved?
All bass clarinet, all put through effect pedals. Actually, think what I'm thinking about for this set, I don't use a lot of the loop function.
Ooh.
It's more delayed and sounds, or yeah, sorry, different textures and different sounds.
Sweet.
And yeah, I'm pretty happy with what I will be purveying this Saturday.
Yeah, we've had a good chance to play together once in that free improv group, and your bass clarinet playing sounds beautiful. So
thank you.
Should be amazing. Yes. At this show.
Very looking forward to that.
Shout out to Nick.
Shout out to Nick. Thanks for having us here. Are we running out of time?
We should let you play your last song to end off this feature, and as well as the SMK program for today. Brent, Danielle, Steve, Ian,
Nick,
thank you for coming into Guelph. I know this was, it was a miracle pretty much for you guys to come today. It all worked out.
Yeah, we haven't played together in a couple weeks, so we had to like rehearse at Jesse Alarcon's place. There's his name again. He sacrificed his place this morning for us to make our noise in. So.
Real MVP. Thank you, Nick, for having us on here and hosting us in this lovely place. We miss Guelph a lot, so it's good to be back.
Excellent. So what's the song we're going to be ending off with?
This one is called Algorithm. Tasty. Goodbye.
Here we go.
Thanks. Here's Animatist with ending off here on the SMK Sentinel's Marvelous Kaleidoscope at CFRU 93.3 FM.